Calm Down with Aaron and Carissa is a production of iHeartRadio. Hey now, we're back, everyone. Calm Down podcast. Get off the IG for a second and hop on over and listen. Aaron gets an award for being the Calm Down IG takeover queen. How's
your
list?
We're really cranking them out.
Are you wearing the today? Oh, it's not a whatever it's called.
We're not giving him credit.
Nope. Are you wearing it? Are you not wearing it? I don't hear a
no.
list. No. They're in their case. I'm not going to show it. But I got to tell you, there's these like, you can't see unless you're watching on YouTube. You get these plastic dots plastered on your teeth. So all day long, if I don't have my things in, I just like play with my teeth. It's like I got an issue. It's fine. Go on. But I don't have a lisp. For those of you that haven't checked out our IG account, Aaron's been wearing these things, these corrective spacers, yep. if you will, and she's been talking with a lisp. It's very entertaining. Did you ever have, you had to have braces. You have such a good
never.
Smile.
You
I never,
never
had braces.
Had braces?
You bitch. I had headgear. I had the that's sexy. I had the rubber bands. I had the whole thing, and my teeth have still moved. So now wonder you're having some issues there. Well, welcome to the club. Okay.
Thank you. I always wanted to be like you guys. I always wanted braces. So I used to put like my chewing gum up over my teeth so I could kind of be like, and now I hate it and I sound ridiculous. And the dry mouth, it ain't
cute. It's a thing. It's a real thing. It's like you've had 7 bottles of wine or a case of Adderall.
Yeah.
That was my Saturday. But anyways,
you should put that on the disclaimer before you do these things.
It's
like, how many bottles of wine or Adderall?
I don't know. It's a prescription, okay? It's an actual, it's medical. It's medicinal.
Sure.
I am very excited, though, as I try to develop some saliva in my mouth. I'm jealous of that water. Water, Wadsworth. You lost your mind over Jonathan Knight. I am going to lose my mind over our guest today, Brian Baumgartner. He played Kevin Malone in The Office for all 9 seasons. He is a dream come true. And he is also the number one, I believe, let's check with Stephen Glanis on this, grossing individual on Cameo. So that's reason enough to talk to him for some tips and tricks, if you will. But everyone, you know, the cult classic that is The Office. I'm so excited to have him on the show. And I know you are too.
Yeah, he's great. And I am late to the party with The Office. Jarrett and I love watching Seinfeld. We crack up over that. And you've been on me. Jimmy Traina from Sports Illustrated has been on me. Finally started watching. Love everything about it. Jim and Pam forever. It's great. And I'm so excited to talk to him. I've been listening to his podcast and just hearing the stories behind everything. And we were talking, you and I, last week about this show and about some of our first jobs, if they were in an office, if they weren't an office, in an office. Go, you tell me, give me some of your faves, first jobs.
I have had, as you know, 700 jobs just running through them. I've been a barista at Starbucks. I was a sales associate at Nordstrom's. I wore all white, weighing way too much at Cheesecake Factory. Those were big girl pants.
I love that brag.
White is not slimming. There's a reason that the service industry wears black. Let's just say that, okay? I had too much of the brown bread. but the job that I, aside from working in HR at Fox, which I don't know if people know this, I tell the story, but like that's how I actually started at Fox Sports, was in the human resources department, which anyone that knows me, you very well, knows that there's no reason I should be working in HR ever because I'm a violation in every shape and form. But I took that job there because it was the only job available in Fox Sports. But the job that still makes me laugh for a couple reasons is I worked at a tanning salon. Did you ever go to were you ever in a tanning bed? Come on, Dazzler.
Crushed a tanning bed. Crushed it. I can smell my skin right now.
I mean, God, there's nothing better. And some days I would do triples.
God, Carissa, melanoma line one.
Well, look, I love my dermatologist now, and we are the only marks on my skin now are tattoos, but that's not important. I abused the privilege of working at said tanning salon in Beach. It was below a Hooters. A lot of Hooters girls came through there. A lot of girls, they didn't want to wear the nylons.
The wings are good.
Oh, yeah. But let's just say this. I soon found out, Aaron Andrews, in your virgin ears, because you are not as wild as I am or was, I found out that this tanning salon was actually a little cover-up for some tax money, if you know what I mean. So I started seeing things go out the back door that, let's just say, were illegal at the time. And so I was like, oh, that's what this tanning salon is for. So Yeah, that's why they let me tan there as much as I wanted to, because I didn't rat them out. Because I, you know what? Snitches get stitches, Aaron. I didn't rat them out.
Mm-hmm. Did you have the little goggles on while these transactions
sometimes
were happening,
or did you take them off? So yeah, so that was my shadiest job. But yeah, what about you, my dear?
Well, first of all, I want to go back to the tanning bed. I used to think I was so dangerous since, yes, I basically was a big square growing up. I used to think I was so dangerous when I wouldn't tan with the goggles on because I didn't want the side, like, tan thing. So I would close my eyes and then I would be like, do you think I'm going blind? Do you think I'm going blind? And I would open my eyes a little bit in the bed.
Danger,
be like,
danger.
I'm not going blind. I'm not going blind.
How about the fact that people would be like, oh, are the beds clean? I'm like, yeah, they're totally clean. I would just like wipe it down. I was like,
ew,
not real. I know it's so gross.
Which
and
is
then
why
was like,
I did a stand up.
But don't worry, I'd give you like the Playboy sticker or the palm tree see like what kind of tan you were getting.
So dirty.
So gross when you think about it. I actually went to a tanning salon like a year ago and I was in there for about 4 minutes and I was like, I gotta get out. I gotta get out. This is weirding me out. Why am I back here? Again, consult your dermatologist if you see anything wrong with your skin. This is not an endorsement for tanning beds. And for all you tanning bed salon owners, I hope you're running your business legally out there. But where did you work? I know you've had a bazillion jobs too.
Well, speaking of sun damage, well, first of all, I worked at an Old Navy in college. I worked at a Banana Republic growing up just because the boy I had a crush on in high school was there. So I wanted to be there. And then Banana Republic. I don't think I did J. Crew. It was basically Old Navy, Banana Republic. I missed that shirt folding situation every single day. I mean, it was just so good. I had no business styling people because I also couldn't style myself, but will never forget. You don't want to sell just one item. You want to try to sell two or three. One is bad. It brings like your cue something down.
Yeah, you want to
upsell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sure. But the end-all, be-all sun damage job I had was we had a water park in town, and one of my sorority sisters at the University of Florida knew somebody who was doing the hiring for the lifeguard or ride technician at the water park, and I was recruited. Basically, I just wanted to get
you
tan
were hot.
All summer
That's
long
what happened.
In my red hot, like, Baywatch suit. It was awful. I never was trained properly. I didn't know CPR to quote unquote save anyone's life.
As a lifeguard, you didn't know CPR?
As Jesus. A lifeguard. I mean, if someone went down, I hope to God the lifeguard next to me would know how to do it. And my dad would just be like, I cannot believe this is happening. One of the worst experiences at this park I ever had, and Tampa Bay, lightning capital of the world, and it's no joke. Those storms, you can set your clock by it. 4 o'clock, you are having bolts of lightning hit your house. Back in the day, we'd lose our VCR. My mom's like, unplug it, unplug it. Like, we'd be running around the house unplugging, like, the TVs and, you know, the VCRs. I'm on this massive, like, 7-story raft ride, okay? Where, like, the raft would come down, and then there's this pool, and I'm so cute. I'm getting my son and pushing. Keep your arms on the handle. Keep your legs crossed and pushing you down. Well, a storm is coming and they have not told us we can come off this ride yet. And it's like black. It's like Wizard of Oz, Dorothy and the house are flying away and you can just see the bolts of lightning. And one of my girlfriends was in the pool up top and I was in the pool, the second one. And she's like, are we supposed to go down? Is the ride closed? I've been in like turbulence with an airplane. I've been in crazy situations. This is where I was like, kiss your ass goodbye because you're about to die in this great bathing suit, but in a wonderful tan, but in a pool of water. We got down, but I just remember like bolts of lightning. And I'm like, I'm going to die here at this water park.
And here I thought CPR was going to be the issue. They don't call the NHL team Tampa Bay Lightning for nothing, folks.
Stanley Cup
is
winner
real.
Two-time. Rings look fabulous.
Better get
by
that
the way.
Stanley Cup out of the Lightning. That is a magnet right for it.
Wow.
Oh, I can't believe you didn't know CPR. I mean, yeah. I had a drug ring going over here at Salon Beach right across from and below Hooters. You do the math if you live in. And you didn't know CPR. We are criminals, you and
I. No, the biggest thing was like you didn't want kids making out in the lazy river. You know what I mean? You just got to be like, hey. Blow that whistle.
Blow the
no
whistle.
No making out.
Blow the whistle. That's a different kind of song right there. Oh my God. You probably had a, imagine if you, that tan was probably unfortunate though. A one piece tan.
The crisscross back.
Yeah, that's
no
tough.
No bueno for the sorority dresses when I went back to school, you know? Like, I mean, there's no cover up that's helping you with
no
that.
No strapless
thing.
For you, sweetheart. No sweetheart nope. line. Mm-mm,
can't do
right.
that. Can't do that in the lazy river. Nope.
Oh God. But for all you kids out there listening, try to avoid working in jobs where you'll get arrested. But I always encourage people to have all the jobs you possibly can, especially oh, yeah. in the service industry. Because every time I'm at a restaurant now, I was also a bartender. Every time you're at, you know, at these places, you remember what it was like. Look, if you're going to the water park, Aaron, you feel for that lifeguard. You know, you're asking.
Get her
for-
off that tower when it's lightning, man. Get her off that tower. Get her down.
You know, Romeo and Juliet, rescue me.
My biggest problem was when I would work the slides and like you'd have to give the people a push and you'd say, cross your legs, cross your arms. And like the hairy backs that were
ew,
wet, I couldn't deal. I couldn't deal. I didn't like
oh,
it.
The push.
It's a lot of touching.
That's why I didn't clean the salon. A lot of sweating. A lot of sweating in the tanning salon.
I was sweating on the tanning bed. There was like a pool usually I would leave. It was hot in there.
Well, it's a tanning salon. But that's where we're at.
That smell though. Oof.
Is there anything worse? Actually, here's the deal. Has anyone invented a tanning, like a sunless
no.
tan that doesn't... I know.
And it gets in your armpits, by the way. You shave your armpits. This was my problem when I did Dancing with the Stars. They'd coat us head to toe with this like Brazilian stuff. Then we'd shave our armpits the morning of the show because, you know, you're showing your armpits. And it looks like you had a hairy armpit because the tanning stuff was all in the follicles.
God. There's a lot of problems here.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's go back to when I was a bartender at 4 on Street. They didn't have a POS system. My friends loved coming in. The best job to have in college was a bartender. Why? So you could still party and make money. Now everybody's updated their systems, but this was cash only. Let's just say it was a lot of cash for me, not a lot of cash for everyone else. You know what
oh
I mean?
Oh my God, Carissa,
hey,
you're
I don't
a criminal.
Know. I'm working. Hey, it's look. It's better to ask for forgiveness, not permission. Okay, Aaron? You don't take CPR classes, so who's the real criminal?
I would have if they had offered.
Me stealing money is not killing people. You could have killed someone.
Listen, everybody went down my slide with arms crossed, legs crossed. Have a good one. Ew.
Crisscross applesauce. Well, we're going to talk to a guy coming up next that has had a lot of years of experience in an office on the hit show The Office. Brian Baumgartner is coming up next. I can't wait to see what illegal job he had before he was on the hit show The Office. This is Calm Down Podcast. Don't call the police on us. J-O-B. There he is.
Hello, everybody.
Forget The Office. Teach us all the ways on Cameo, man.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, let me just... Yeah,
are those your certificates for being the number one grossing Cameo guy back there?
Listen, did you guys talk to Stephen Galanis?
Hell yeah, we did.
He got me on Cameo. He's like, if I can't get you on Cameo, we got a problem. So
I mean, who got you on Cameo?
Well, I've only made a couple hundred dollars, so I need some tips. Hi, Brian, by the way.
How are you?
We're good. We're so excited to have you here for a myriad of reasons.
I'm so excited. Are we recording yet or no?
Yeah, yeah. We're always recording.
Hell
always
yeah.
Press record.
Very good. Very. Oh, then I'll be quiet. But very good, by the way. That was a little trick I learned when I was started doing this. Yeah. Always be recording.
Well, because we interview athletes for a living, as you know. But the second you say... You know, and I don't know if you feel the same way, but the second you say, all right, we're ready to go in 3, 2, the answers are completely different. So
oh, yeah.
We just
of
go.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. You know, it's so, do you guys know Eric Anders Lang?
Do you know Eric Lang? Is? Of course I do, from the IT department. Why would I know that? Because I always had issues with my computer, Brian.
Who are you talking about?
This is totally a different person.
No, I thought, totally I know an Eric Lang. Who's the Eric Lang you know?
Eric Anders Lang.
Oh, there's a hyphen.
Well, I don't know if there's a hyphen, but he's become like the golf guy. Like golf. I think he does. He started like Adventures in Golf. He had this podcast. I think Scratch is his now too. That may not be 100% right.
Jared, I need my husband here. He would know this. Does he have some weird thing on IG that helps you with your swing? Because that's the only thing my husband freaking watches. Who is that guy? I want to kill him. No, I'm just joking.
No,
so he's not the guy in the IT department.
He does this. Well, here, the reason I'm bringing this up, which again, because it's always about me. No, I'm kidding. But he shot this video with me a couple of years ago. And, you know, he's done Tiger and he's done all these guys. Of course, my video with him is the number one watch video that he has because that's the way that I roll. Anyway, he did this podcast with me. He's all about positivity in golf, inclusiveness. He started this thing. I don't want to talk about him that long, but he started this thing called the Random Golf Club. And what it is, this is kind of about his temperament. It's basically like it's a golf club that you can be a part of. Just you say that you're a part of it and you're a part of it. And he goes out with like 20 sums and it's all, it's like the club exists like in your own mind or whatever, but they do have gatherings. And anyway, he's all about, and he is the one that taught me this trick, which was I sat down to do a podcast and we talked for like 10 minutes. And then I'm like, in my brain, I'm like, is this guy going to start recording? Like, what the hell are we doing here? And then I'm like, are we going? And he's like, oh no, we're going. And so when I started sitting down with all my old office compadres, I actually took it a step further. And I, because I hadn't seen Steve Carell in a couple of years. So I said, I'm going to hide in a studio because we were still in person. I'm going to hide. I'm not even going to see them when they come in, make sure that the audio is rolling. And so like the beginning of all of my interviews now, what you hear is like our genuine non-performed reaction of like just us seeing together, like tears happen or like, you know, just like, or just like immediate giving shit back and forth with each other or whatever. I don't know if I can say that or not, but
you can say shit. Of course you can. This is a podcast, Brian. You know that.
Yeah. So you can say whatever. FCC, forget that.
FAA, who cares?
FAA, yeah. FAA. Did I say it wrong? Anyway, so yes, I appreciate that. That's what I do.
We are thrilled to have you on. As somebody who, thank goodness, the positive from COVID for me was that I got to watch every, truth be told, I had seen a lot of episodes of The Office, but I hadn't watched the entire catalog of The Office. So I did that during quarantine. Aaron soon followed after. And like every one of your adoring fans, the first question is, does he really talk like that? That's the number one question on your Wikipedia asking page. So you clearly don't talk like Kevin.
Did you not know the answer to that?
No, I knew the answer to that, but there's a lot of listeners, Brian. We don't want to assume everyone's best friends like we are, you know?
I have to say, that's the one thing I was blown away with your podcast. And I was telling my mom and dad because they're huge Office fans. And I was pumped to tell them that you were coming on. Your voice on your podcast is so smooth and so sensuous. I mean, we need tips about all these things.
Yeah, because I sound like I'm on crack.
Someone said to me, now you're not going to think it. You're not going to think it, but there is some truth to it. It's about, I guess, my rhythm or whatever. Someone joked that I sound like Tom Hanks. Well, someone that I know, Tom Hanks mixed with smoke and whiskey or something. So there's
that's
like
great. Sensual.
A little more buttery, yes.
Yeah,
like a Sauvignon Blanc or a Chardonnay. What's your drink of choice, Brian?
Mine would be either really red or really brown.
Ooh, I like those rules.
Yes.
Very good.
Not a Chardonnay. But I'm not, but that is my voice. It's the same voice I'm using now, right?
I got to be honest. I've listened to quite a few. I just got done with the Phyllis one. And no, you are just Phyllis. Oh. Had you had any training before? I mean, no, you are very buttery. You are. You like lay it on.
I'm less buttery now.
Listen, I'll take you however I can get you. Can we talk about more tricks? Because when we just told you we were recording on the podcast, what else have you learned about, you know, doing this, the podcast or the pod as they like to call them?
The pods?
Yeah.
You know, truth be told, this idea, Ben Silverman and Propagate approached me about basically producing this idea. And it sort of came out of some other people writing books or so forth about the show. And it sort of started with the idea of, why is someone else telling our story? Like, why is someone else doing it? I'm about to get to your answer. I talk in a circular way at times.
We love this.
And so when we started the idea of telling the story, there was a lot of conversation. Like, there's a great, great journalist. I bring his name up all the time. I haven't talked to him in like 15 years, but Bill Carter with the New York Times, he wrote like that, I think it was called Late Night or something, about like the David Letterman Leno thing. Like, he's a known guy. So it was like, should we get Bill Carter? Or should we get some journalist from Rolling Stones or something to, you know, to interview everybody? And basically what I/we decided was, you know, I may not be a great journalist like the two of you. I may not be like an investigative, I may not know what questions to ask, but what I do know is that the conversations that I'm going to get are going to be conversations that nobody else can have mm-hmm. with them. That the shared experience that we have together, coupled with me doing a lot of thinking about it, is going to get us closer to at least where I want to be than anybody else doing it. And truly, that's sort of where we started with it. And so, you know, I think that we were attempting to have real conversations. You know, I mean, that's so obvious, but I mean, like, really not an interview, but really a shared conversation that was a give and take back and forth. And as soon as we sort of found that, I think that's where we really had something. I mean, Phyllis, I mean, you said you just listened to the Phyllis one. I mean, that she cried three times.
I know.
And she doesn't talk, she doesn't do a lot of press. She doesn't talk to a lot mm-hmm. of people. And it was really about just going back in time. And I think the other thing was we looked at it as a history told by individuals who remember things differently. And so, like, that's such like a nerdy school answer. Like, there are no right or wrong answers, because sure there are. There are definitely wrong answers. But in terms of the conversation, it really was about just, well, what do you remember? Like, what were you, you know, how, and stories came out from people that I had no clue about. I'll give you one. You'll love this because you guys are journalists.
Settle in.
I'm talking so much. Here we go.
I love it. That's why you're on. Are you kidding me? This is like, I've been waiting to talk to you for a long time. So have at it.
Okay. Well, I'm talking to, her name is Laverne Caracusi Milano. I hope I'm saying that right. She was the head makeup artist by the end. And we're talking, we're having a conversation about the look of the show, and people are, you know, what came out of Friends, and this was different in a way because we weren't all sexy looking. You know, we were sort of talking about all that stuff.
Debatable.
And then we start talking about the writer strike that happened and what happened with the crew. The writers went on strike for 100 days in the middle of when we were shooting this. And she gets this little hitch. She starts to say something. She gets this little hitch in her voice. She goes, am I allowed to talk about that? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure everything in my brain was firing, yes,
go,
yes,
go,
yes,
go.
Please, what are you going to say? And I didn't know what I did. I had no idea what she was going to. And so I was like, oh, yeah, no, I mean, you can, I mean, whatever you want to do. Blah, 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 blah. And she tells me that Greg Daniels, we talk a lot about the family that we became on the show, which was really true. She said, well, you know, we were into the writer's strike and it was the holidays and it was Christmas. And we got something in the mail. And she said, I know it was from him personally. Greg Daniels wrote every member of the crew a check and sent it to them in the mail. She was like, I know it was from him because it was his personal check with his personal information on it. I had no idea that this had happened. And she goes into it and like what that meant and what that meant after that. Like, I would go to battle for this guy. This is what, you know, he did for us. So anyway, stories like that came out that truly I was there, but I had no idea.
Oh, that's amazing. It's so true. And I know Aaron can attest to this. And, you know, being with the same crew, how long have you been with Troy and Joe, Aaron, now going on how many years? Six, seven,
eight, 8 years.
Becomes a family.
But I was with College Game Day for like 8 years too. Yeah,
yeah.
It's crazy.
I got off the phone earlier today talking to Terry Bradshaw. We were just these people become your family. And right. So when you spend so much time together for you guys on set, and you were there from the beginning, which is just so incredible. I mean, it's like if there's a lottery ticket to be had, Ryan, it's that golden Willy Wonka, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory ticket that as an actor, you can only hope that not only are you on a show that is this successful, but with this many great people. I'm sure that, now having a little distance between when you guys were last all together, at least, in terms of filming the show, how much do you appreciate it as time goes on, what you really had?
Oh, I mean, it's crazy. In some ways, like my life is like there. It's like not like the BC and AD, but it really is. It's like before the off. Because about that time, I'm like, oh my god, that was a lifetime ago. And like for me, it was essentially my 30s, like my entire 30s.
Because it's 9 years, right? 30, yeah.
30, 31, what?
Yeah, you're 9 years, right?
Yeah. I mean, 10 years, nine seasons. So, I mean, it was that whole decade. And, the thing that I talk about is that we really, people forget, like Steve Carell became a mega, like the biggest comedy star in movies. But that was, we'd started. And when we started, he really had not done very much, and nobody really had him. And a lot of people had worked for a long time and had, some successes, small successes, and a lot of failures. And so we started with a place, we were all sort of at net zero. And the show struggled so much the first couple of years. And, it was like going to our first Emmys together, which was like we really were the Beverly Hillbillies. I mean, I told this story. Oscar Nunez reminded me, I had this little bungalow house up in the Beverly, what do they call it? Beverly Hills PO, which is the post office box that says 90210, but you're really not in Beverly Hills. Like, it doesn't mean anything. And that was I was the closest house to the Beverly Hilton for the Golden Globes. It was, he was reminding me, it was like, we showed up at the Golden Globes the first time when Steve actually won in a Honda Civic. We pulled up to the front door.
Amazing.
Me, David Denman, who played Roy, and Oscar Nunez, and maybe one more. And it was like, we were like, where do we park? They're like, you can't park? What are you talking about? There's no parking here. And we were, and like David Denman like went and valeted at Trader Vic's or something or at the Starbucks and like walked
2 hour
back.
Limit. Yeah.
You guys worth the ticket. Get off, I guess. I mean, but like that really was us. And all of those experiences and us going to, being together for such a long time and starting at that net. And then, when the success started happening, it definitely made it that much more rewarding.
The Globes is where everybody gets hammered, right? So that you show up in a Honda Civic. I mean, come on. What do you remember? Did you guys just say, let's go for it? This is like our night out.
100%. Well, and this tells you even more was that year. And this was all sort of the turning point of the show, actually, in a lot of ways. This was midway. So it was like January, end of December, which would have been our second season. We were like struggling to stay on the air. And really we were dead like 4 times before that. We weren't going to go. And then 40-Year-Old Virgin came out. And suddenly right before that, we had the first Christmas episode we did, which was the first time we went above 10 million viewers on a Thursday.
Wow.
Oh, that's kind of a big number. And Steve was nominated for a Golden Globe. The show wasn't nominated. And we watched, this is part of it, we watched the ceremony. We weren't allowed inside. They wouldn't. They were like, no, you're not. You're not coming inside. The NBC had set up there's all the parties that are going on in different areas of the
Globes.
And their party was on the roof of the parking garage. This is not a joke. On the outdoor roof of the parking garage, they had set up a tent and there was a party. And we were there and we all drank a lot. Like a yes. lot.
Brown, red, purple, blue, all the colors.
It was all the colors. All of the colors. And he wasn't supposed to win. We thought, this is our one party ever. Let's go.
Go.
And then Steve won. And that night, that's just one of those nights. Like, I didn't even win any. None of us won anything. Steve won, but he showed up afterward and we like tackled him. And, I mean, it was a crazy, crazy night. One of my favorite pictures of us, and you could look it up. There was, and I noticed recently, because I told this story to someone, I was reminding someone, I think it was Jenna Fisher on the podcast. I went and looked at the picture and I was like, oh, you can't see it. But they had like the gigantic like chocolate fondue, you know, fountain.
Oh, the fountains. Mm-hmm.
And I, of course, tried some. Dripped it right down the shirt. All the way right down the shirt. And anyway, there was like a, I think it's a TV guide, like photo booth thing that they have. And Steve came up, he had won. And it was like, I will never forget that night. And we all crammed. Oh, there was like 20 of us crammed into the little photo booth. And with the chocolate on my thing. But I realized that in the photo, at least I kind of turned. So yeah, I'm like a side view. So you can't actually see what an idiot I was.
That's amazing. You mentioned that was a turning point for you guys. And prior to that, now hard to believe that you were struggling to even stay on air. For you, was there a moment, Brian, where all of a sudden you realize I can't go to the coffee shop, to the restaurant, to like, oh, this thing is big now. I'm here and the Honda Civic is no longer allowed.
I can't drink all the colors in public anymore.
We'd still do.
Get back in the Honda Civic. Of course, I never would have done that. It was gradual, I think, for us, because, you know, early on, we were struggling and truly believed that we would be canceled. There was something that was happening even early on that kind of gave us pause. We didn't talk about it so much, but, you know, this was back, you know, 15 years ago, whatever, and Nielsen ratings, that was the big thing, right?
Yeah.
They're little boxes.
Have you ever met anyone with a Nielsen box? This always plagues me. Who's got the box?
Where's
the box?
Where is this box? Yes, that's right. So people say the ratings, this many people watching. Well, it's really based on some complicated formula of the Nielsen boxes. And your point is exactly right. That we sort of started having some anecdotal evidence, like college, and we sort of went, no one in college in a dorm has a Nielsen box. Like, no one is sort of calculating that. I think in sports, actually, it works very similarly in a way. Like, there's sometimes something becomes kind of culty or everyone's talking about it, but it's not reflected in that way. I think that was kind of starting to happen a little bit.
This is actually a true crimes podcast. We've exposed the Nielsen box ratings. Mystery has been solved. There is no Nielsen box.
That's
cereal.
That's right. But I'll tell you, so it was definitely gradual. And let's be honest, I at the very least, I have a distinctive head. Let's just put it that way. And so there were times, actually my favorite story that I have not told in a really long time, but I was shooting a movie somewhat afterward, and John Krasinski, my co-star, was in the movie, and Mandy Moore was in the movie. And we were in Canada, and we were shooting at a sushi place. I mean, this is a long time ago, but still, they were John Krasinski, and that was Mandy Moore. And we had like three people come up to the table to ask me to take a picture. And they're sitting right there. They're sitting right. It's like no one sees them. So that happens for me. But the crazy thing is, which wasn't your question, is that now the show and really the reason, the idea about doing the podcast now was based on, and it's funny, we talked about it in like a true crime way. I said, I want to do the podcast like it's a true crime. And the question is this, why is this show now that we haven't shot in 7 years? Why is it bigger now?
Yeah, why?
On the air. And why is it now, not just bigger than that, it's the most watched show in television right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like new shows, the Stranger Things, all the like hot new stuff. more people are consuming and watching the show now. And so it's like, why? And
what's the answer?
Is I don't really, you know, but I think that the, at least the smartest thing that I figured out is that when we were on set, this was early on when we were struggling. There was some stat that kept going around, and I don't remember what the number was, but it was something like 200 million people in America work in an office. So if we can get 10% of those people to watch, or 5% of those people to watch, like we've got them. We're good. Like we're great.
Yeah.
And I think that what we didn't realize was at the time and through today, that we were building a show, sure, that was about that. But the parallel between an unreasonable boss who makes you do unreasonable things with a group of people that you're not choosing to be with, how well that translates to an unreasonable teacher who makes you do unreasonable assignments, sitting next to people you may not choose to sit next to for year after year after year after year, and how the archetypes of the characters are so universal that sort of shared experience of being a group of people against an unreasonable authority figure, how well that translates. And I think really that's the smartest answer for, I think, because now it's like 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds. You brought up Kim. I mean, I'm talking to 12-year-olds now, and it's like, why are you watching sexual harassment episode? That is definitely not... When the blow-up doll comes in, you should not. Where are your parents?
I'm going to tell you why I think it's so successful as a viewer and incredible supporter is because you guys say what we're now not allowed to say
right.
in any situation. And having, I used to work in human resources, which I had zero business working in human resources. I would get drunk on my lunch break. But it's this idea that you can't do those things, but you guys would do them. And so, and also like breaking that. I'm in TV and I don't, is it the fourth wall? I don't know what wall it is. Any wall that you broke and being able to look into the camera and have those testimonial moments and say all the things, like that's just the hilarity for me is doing and saying things that we're not supposed to be saying or doing.
Yeah. Well, Carissa, that the really, I mean, this boggles to talk exactly about what you're talking about, like how crazy society and the world has become. And even then, you know, there was, and by the way, this is all positive. I'm not, don't cancel me here. But we Never. Eventually had to do sexual harassment seminars, right? Like at NBC Universal, we were required to do sexual harassment seminars.
As a cast? As the whole cast?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Were you guys in character?
As a crew, as a whole, no, everyone to do. And it was like, you know, 90 minutes, 2 hours, and it was once a year. We had to do the thing, sit there and sign in and all the stuff. And no joke, the HR reps, which maybe it was you, who came in and they showed the videos, they were showing videos from our show about
with the red-haired girl? The red-haired girl?
Yes. They're showing us videos of what we can't do.
Amazing.
And it's like, what? And no one would say like, okay, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think you're right. I think you're right. I think that Steve and I had kind of a long conversation about this and you know, there's been a lot of talk about, could this show happen today? Could it not happen today? You know, I think that at its core, what made me incredibly proud of the show was that we were saying things that were inappropriate, but we were making, by the looks to the camera, we were making fun of those things.
By saying nothing, literally saying nothing, just the look.
Just a look. I mean,
how many times did you guys wet your pants looking at the camera? Because when you guys do that, I pee my pants. Yes. Like, it is fucking hilarious when you guys just do the glance. Die for it.
Well, now the problem is me not doing it on other things that I'm working on because it's so perfect. I know it is like, it is the stop the scene joke. Like it can be that. Yeah, I mean, we had so much fun. I mean, we truly had so much fun.
It just dawned on me that that's while you're saying that is that look to the audience, the viewer at home is like, you're in on this joke. And that's what makes you feel like you're part of the show. 'Cause you're like, I get it. I'm with you. Even if no one else in this room or this office gets it, I get you, Kevin, you know. Yeah. Wait, I need you to say something how you would say, Kevin. So let's pretend we're in a HR seminar class. Okay, I'm the HR representative.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to ask you, Brian, but you can say it in Kevin's voice. Brian, have you showed up to work today drinking any alcohol?
What do you mean by alcohol?
It was reported by someone on the staff, one of your coworkers, that your breath smelled of alcohol. Have you had anything to drink today, Brian?
No, that was something else.
Okay. Well, you're fired.
Shoot.
Pack your stuff.
I don't know. That was an improv. We just did an improv.
Holy crap, Carissa.
I used to go to Second City and pretend that I was a stand-up comedian. No, but that I just needed the voice. Thank you.
No.
It's funny. And now that I can say whatever, you know, I go to colleges now and people say, like, what you're going to college. What are you teaching? What are you doing? And honestly, don't tell anyone. I don't know exactly what I'm doing. Like, it's partly, I think, supposed to be educational, but I'm sitting in a room with college kids and all they want to hear me say is, like, I'm totally going to bang Holly. Like, that, so it's like, I can talk like I'm talking to you and try to be very erudite, and I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, God, they just want me to say
I know
that other thing.
Well, that's interesting, though, because some actors would say that, okay, that was a character, I've moved on, I'm not, like, is that something you take offense to, or is it something that you are proud of, that character that you created has left such an indelible mark that people make that association?
That is a great question. I would never say that that I take offense to it. I will say this. You were discussing, I don't know if listeners were here at that point, but you were discussing Cameo. And I feel like that even, not even television, that's a stupid thing to say. I feel like it's a collaborative art form. And so oftentimes I get a request that someone wants for Kevin Malone to send someone a message. And I don't do that because I don't think that's like, am I going to put on a suit? Am I going to wear a tie? Am I going to, by the way, my hair was longer. I straight ironed my hair.
Little,
we called it the poof. So I had the poof.
Shout out to the hair girl for not burning you, because I can't get underneath here without burning my neck. That's a small real estate area, and I say that lovingly.
Broad, awkward things. So the answer to that is I won't do that. Like, because I don't think that, I think that's weird. Like, wait, what do you mean? Like, why is Kevin, why is he appearing? I'm here in my office. This is my house. Like, or I'm outside, or I'm like, to me, that's weird. Mm. But I feel like by the same token that people want to hear a little bit from him. So I call it a flavor. And that's how I would, you know, I'm not going to do a Q&A at a college as Kevin Malone. I don't know. That doesn't even make sense. Plus, like, I don't own, that's a character. But he, you know, if he happens to slip out of me a little bit, that sounds weird. Then
thank you for the flavor that you just gave us. Yeah. We love it all.
So that's how I view it. I don't know if that makes sense or not. I don't know if I'm right either.
No, it totally makes sense. It is a character.
Yeah.
And by the way, also, I think that it's a little bit difficult for me. And I think partly this is why you ask, and a lot of people ask, is that, and I don't mean like John Krasinski, for example, is not that dissimilar to Jim Halpert, right? I mean, the characters are different. Their wants are different. They John Krasinski doesn't work in a paper company. But in terms of the characterization of the two, there's not a whole lot of change. Or Paul Lieberstein, or right. Oscar Nunez, or Jenna Fischer in a lot of ways, too. It's not very different. I just am very different. So I view it like I'm going into a character that isn't really me. And I think there are other things that go into that doesn't feel right to me. I don't know.
I think that was perfect. I'm bummed out because we don't have you for much more. And I had 75, I wrote them down as you were talking, 75 questions for you. But the one thing, so this is called Calm Down, our podcast. That's what we named it.
Right.
Basically, because our husbands are like, once we get in a rant or if we're at work, everybody's like, calm down. Is there something or someone, and we've asked Kevin Hart this, you know, is there a calm down award you would like to give to someone or somebody in society? Or Kevin just had kind of said to us, what, Carissa, that people just, he just wished people would take a step back and
relax,
not take things so serious.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I do.
My dog needs to calm down.
Your
wow.
Dog is who I was going to say, actually. I don't know if this award is for me. It might should be for me, but I'm going to give it to air travelers. Now, you guys travel a lot.
Yes.
You guys travel a lot. And people who are traveling on an airplane, right, the entire experience, behave in a way that they don't behave in any other place in society. The behavior
yes.
is just atrocious. And now, again, maybe I'm telling them to calm down. Okay. Maybe it's me who has to calm down because it does make me it makes me crazy. But like, I'll give you, well, here's one example. Sit in your chair until your group is called to the airplane. Just sit down. The like crowding, the multiple bags that you're bringing. Well, don't. If you're going on a trip, check your bags. Check your bags. Don't crowd the thing. And then my most insanely crazy making thing is the airline stops and people stand up and shove their ass in your face. I do not understand it. Sit down. You're not getting off here any faster than if everybody just calms down. So there you go. Calm down.
It's so good.
Brian, can I get an amen?
Seriously. Thank you. You know what? The next show we're going to write together, collectively, you heard it here first, The Airplane. The Office was done. The Airplane is next because there's a lot of comedy that ensues in an airplane and an airport. We appreciate the time to your wildly successful Cameo account, to your incredible tenure on The Office and the podcast that has followed. We appreciate you taking time away from your family and everybody to spend a little time with us. Thank you.
You're amazing.
Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
I get why your publicist put a timer on you because we would just keep going like the Energizer Bunny. So we get it. She's doing her job.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. And we'll see you, I don't know, down the road at a game.
Yeah. Who do you root for, by the way? Who's your team?
The Green Bay Packers.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I figured that. But I knew you were from Atlanta, so I didn't know if you were worried about the Falcons.
I am. And a lot of those guys, I mean, that's my sports thing is that I have found it very odd as I have through golf and other experiences gotten to know guys personally. It feels really weird to like hold on to the hometown thing. Now my friends from Atlanta give me shit about this all. They're like, what are you doing? Like, this is where you're from. I'm like, yeah, but like, I don't know. I'm weird. The Dodgers are, I moved to LA. I'm a huge baseball fan. I moved to LA and I lived all around the country before then. And I just was like, I want to go see baseball and what I'm going to get back to Atlanta and see two games a year. So one of the first things I did, and I started way high and I started moving lower, was I got Dodgers season tickets.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. Now you were watching last night. Mm-hmm. My husband was pissed off about that game last night.
God, that was so aggravating.
What happened?
I'll tell you what happened.
Scott Boras was there.
Apparently at the wrong time.
You're the best. Come to a game. You. Come to a Packers game when we're not freezing our asses off at Lambeau.
I will, although I love it. I love going there when it's cold.
Oh, yeah. It's great. Let me tell you. And then you get to go to your heated suite. And I'm still down there freezing my ass off. It's awesome.
No, I just... It's so true.
Erin's suite is so great. Meanwhile, Erin Andrews is freezing her ass off.
Let me just say, I like the...
Yeah, it's awesome.
You're making me laugh. But the, you know, the environment around it and the...
Yeah, it's the best. It's the best out there. But yeah, I'll make your ass come be down there for all four quarters. Plus warm-ups too. Not go up to his booth and have like, buffet and stuff.
I'll come down before the game. I'm there. I'm standing there. Come say hi.
Love it. Yeah, that's awesome. Oh, I can't wait.
All right, you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're awesome. That guy, I mean, we need a part two, part three, part four, part five, part six. I'm going to tell you to go to our Calm Down podcast IG. I'm probably going to hit it right after we're done recording this and talk about what a fan I am of his. Was always a fan when I watched the show, but now I love him even more. He better come to a Green Bay Packers game. I'm going to give him a lot of shit, too, if he sits in a suite the whole time.
I love it. He was trying to intimate that the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field is fun as long as he's not freezing, is the situation there.
Super fun.
So good. To your point, we could have went on and on. Nine seasons was still not enough as him as Kevin Malone on The Office. But what a great guy. I can also see why Cameo is incredible for him as a platform because he's so personable and lovely. In fact, fun fact, I was actually watching some of his cameos, as creepy as that
really?
Is. Well, yeah, because I was thinking about, you know, as I'm new to the space, how I could get better, how I could like give the audience what they really want. I mean, I'm clearly not the actor and the personality that he is, but he's lovely all the way around. We were very lucky to talk to him, and I can definitely see why that show, you know, he mentioned being a family and just when you start with being in that Honda Civic and you end up what will go down as one of the greatest shows in the history of television, to go on that ride with that crew. Can you imagine how many outtakes that, you know, that would last another 25 seasons of all the things they couldn't put on air? So
he says in his podcast, what made them work is that they were just normal people having fun and just there was nothing, you know, like he mentioned the Friends cast being so glamorous. And when he just told us, that story of the Globes and just going after it and the chocolate fondue and all the colors they drank, that's something we all can relate to and we all want to do if we ever got invited to the Golden Globes. You've been there. I haven't. What I have done, though, is be on a plane four times a week, want to absolutely cuss out every single person on it for acting like animals. That's a podcast for another time. But I appreciate his Calm Down Award because sit down. Like, we are not like, have you lost your goddamn mind? Sit down.
Also, who are the people that are crowding? If you're in zone one, you get to go first. If you're in zone four, don't crowd the zone one. So I got to be like, are you going? Are you not going? And now we're in a whole thing. And just go when your zone's called. It's fine.
Flight attendants, if you're out there and you're listening, they're my favorite people in the world. They don't get enough credit. They don't get enough love. I always talk to them. Listen, they're not paid to be your waitress or your concierge. Shut up. Shut up and sit down and put your seatbelt on.
That's who we need to have on as a flight attendant.
Oh,
I can't wait. We'll call it research for our show coming out. The current show that we have is Calm Down Podcast. Thank you guys for listening. We will be back next week. Have a good week, everyone.
Put your seatbelt on.
Exits are here, 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 and here.
Put your mask on before your child's.
In the event of an emergency.
Calm Down with Erin and Carissa is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.